Dr. Mayros joins us now. First of all, congratulations on making the list. For those who don't know, how does the Outstanding Academic Title list work in terms of its criteria?
So thank you very much, Ariane. Good to be here. The titles on the list are selected by Choice Magazine, and they are mostly selected for things such as excellence in presentation and scholarship, importance relative to other literature, distinctions as the first treatment of a topic, and the originality or the uniqueness of the treatment. And certainly I see that selection as a kind of vote of confidence, if you like, in the importance of the topic that the book covers.
Sounds like a tough criteria to fill. In writing the book, which of America's actions towards international genocides were you most surprised about?
Well, as sad as it sounds, I can't call the U.S. administration's inaction on genocide a surprise, because they are pretty much consistent with the familiar patterns that we see in all states, not just in the U.S., of prioritizing hard interests over ethical imperatives, values, and global citizenship. What surprised me more, and this is one of the main questions I cover in the book, was the silence of the American public in the face of this inaction. So I wanted to understand why American citizens, but also Australians and, you know, other people around the world, don't do more when our governments, our elected officials, play bystanders to genocide in our name.
Interesting. What considerations and imperatives has the U.S. been considering in its responses or non-responses to genocide?
Well, it's a great question, and I think a critical one. We cannot hope to influence our government's policies unless we know and understand these concerns, considerations, interests, how these are affecting the decisions that our governments make. And so it's a kind of research where I and others are trying to focus on. More specifically to your question, some of these considerations tend to be recurring, so they happen in more than one case, and so it's easier for us to work them out. But many others are specific to each situation, and so we have to work harder and in a more timely fashion to understand them, because if we want to have an effect, we need to know how to influence those decisions. So some of the most common factors is what we call hard interest, that is, existing or absent economic interest, national interest, security interest, geopolitical alliances, and so on. But then we also have other types of considerations that they involve domestic and international image of countries like the U.S. or Australia, domestic politics, public opinion, electoral interests, and this is where values and morals can play a more prominent role, and so where we as citizens can and should be more proactive.
Leading on from that, how did America's foreign policy at the time influence their actions?
Well, I think it depends, of course, on the case. Each situation was different, so I can't provide an overall answer. But certainly, some of these recurring interests of America had to do with these same: do we have economic interests? Do we have security interests? And these are often led to more inaction than action. And the book covers a number of situations during the 90s in Rwanda, in Bosnia, in Kosovo, and compares them to 2004 when the Darfur genocide took place, and what the Americans did or did not do during that period.
Could varied actions of American allies have influenced the U.S. responses?
Well, look, international coalitions and alliances can certainly have an impact, but at least in the case of the U.S., only to a certain point. The United Nations was created based on this very idea of collective security, where the member states all stand together, even when some costs are involved for other countries. But this doesn't happen very often, unfortunately. So the U.S. would always, on one hand, take into account what other countries do or don't do, and so it's certainly important for Australia and for other, you know, Europeans and other countries to take a more proactive role to increase such things as legitimacy and reduce the cost and risk for all those involved. But there would, at the end of the day, each country would do what they think is most beneficial for them.
But as you say, countries interfering on other countries' affairs is sometimes risky.
Look, this is the question of interfering or intervention, if you like, is a very loaded question. It's based on obviously international laws, and so the question is, what do you do? What does it mean, interfering? Is that something that is coercive, and therefore it falls under the jurisdiction of the Security Council? So no country can interfere in another country unless for self-defense.
Yes.
Except for situations where the Security Council has authorized it based on a need to protect the international peace and security. The problem is that the Security Council is one of the most politicized body in the world, and so many of their decisions are motivated not by concern for the common good, but by the political interests of the five permanent members, including the U.S. and whoever else is sitting at the council at the time.
Seems like a very complicated issue. What lessons can be learned and acted upon to ensure similar events don't happen again?
Well, there is a very long list of lessons, certainly, and you know, research is a key to that. But if I had to maybe summarize some of the main ones, I'd say first and foremost, prevention, prevention, prevention. If we prevent our mass atrocities from taking place, then we don't later need to intervene. Another important key issue is multilateralism. We need to states and the international community need to come together in order to increase legitimacy and to prevent, you know, would-be genocidaries or perpetrators of mass atrocities think that they can get away with these actions. It is also important to learn both, I guess, lesson learned from past failures to act, but also best practices where good policies did save lives. Quality media is also important, and we should support that, because quality media would inform publics and the policymakers of any risks so that we can prevent, but also prevent us as citizens even, and certainly our elected officials, of hiding later behind the excuses of we didn't know. So that's really important. And maybe a couple more. One is we need to support the work of human rights NGOs that are pretty much alone in the campaign against the perpetration of mass atrocities when states are neglecting such a duty. And the second is to demand the accountability from our elected officials when they fail to act, and so maybe increase in the future their motivation to do the right thing. So I think these are the main key issues.
Sounds like there's a lot to learn. EL, thanks for coming on the show, and congratulations again.
Thank you very much.